Holman, Sarah Runo, and Julie Peterson. We are educators, parents, and hilarious.
And conceited. Wait, what?
We invite you on our journey as we have honest, candid conversations with experts, teachers, and parents about their personal experience in education. We are excited to inspire, motivate, and dive deeper into accessible options that allow our children to thrive. So grab a cup of coffee, put in your earbuds, and ignore your children, or crank up that car stereo because you're about to enjoy that traffic jam. And come join in on our motivational, funny, and sometimes explicit conversations. We are chasing education so that you don't have to.
Do you have a song from grade school or, I mean, I'm trying to go back to the early days.
Sure. All of the German that I remember
was the songs.
Were the Christmas songs.
Wow. Oh,
well, those are fun
Still
things to know.
Yeah. What about, did you guys ever learn the months?
What's the money, money, money one that you always sing to me? In German.
Money? Yeah. Oh, I don't think I ever...
That was actually from high school.
I'm like, oh, I don't think I learned that one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, music is such a good tool to use.
Bummer.
Okay.
So we should
stay tuned
to
the end of the podcast
when I will clearly remember. Great. I just thought your brain can retain all of this information.
Most
that
of
I
it.
Called you out and you were like, nope.
Oh, man.
No, but did you guys learn the state song?
I did not learn the state song, but I know a lot of people know it. Mm-hmm. I never learned it.
I believe my sisters did, and I didn't.
I thought you were going to...
No, I didn't.
I feel like I know it better now, even though I don't know it.
That one bugs me just as much as the, 30 days has September, April, June, and December, because 90% of our months rhyme with ember.
I was just going to say, are those even the months?
So I'm like, wait, was it
September or was it
December?
November.
30 days have.
Do they go in order when you say that?
September. December, November.
Wow.
We should just stop.
Have
you don't
all the embers.
Right.
If the Mayans would have built them, the embers could
just all have 31 days.
They would be the embers.
Oh, Lord.
Okay.
All right. Well, speaking of learning things.
Don't ask me for what my thoughts
Moving along.
Okay.
I feel like I should now introduce myself as Mrs. Booger Picker.
Oh,
holy Hannah.
Here we go.
So when we originally were homeschooling the kids, Peyton was in kindergarten.
That's so excited.
And we constantly butt heads, and she never wanted, she thought things would just come to her and she would know them. She didn't want to put in the work to do it.
Oh, totally.
So when I'd be like, okay, oh my gosh, this is so exciting, let's sit down. She would immediately start screaming and fighting. And
right.
So I had this great idea one day to name myself or to come in as a character.
Yeah.
Right? So, and I have no idea where this name came out, but I came around the corner and I was like, I can't even do it because it's awful.
So we'll say what you said.
Mrs.
You said
Doubtfire.
Hello.
Here it comes.
Said hello. I'm Mrs. Booger Picker. Okay. I'm Peyton here today.
Yeah.
You know, something along those lines. Like, out of the blue, she had no idea. She thought it was hysterical, and then I kept it up for the day.
Yep.
Or for the morning. But then she kept, every day thereafter, like, requesting, like, it's not school time unless you're Mrs. Booger Picker.
Yeah.
Which was fine. Like, I'm like, all right, I can keep up the charade long enough. The only downside was I wondered then why I had... chosen to speak in a British accent.
I knew it.
Every single day.
You have to show us. Just real quick. Just introduce yourself.
It was like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Mrs. Booger Picker. Don't be shy. Come out.
Hello. I'm Mrs. Booger Picker. Taking roll call. See, it's already slipping.
Yeah.
I don't. Right. There is just only a few words that I know how to say. Like,
right.
Hello.
Hello.
She didn't learn much that year.
And then it would turn into Eliza.
She
actually didn't learn much that year. And then, you know, Lorraine and Spine stays on the plane.
Oh, Eliza.
I know. I was Eliza in that musical.
Oh, no. Nice.
I wasn't Eliza. I know you're so.
But you built me up.
Yeah, pushed me up.
Impression was
I wasn't. Now my dog is barking.
Background dancer number three.
Actually, I did have
that's more by accurate the way. Than she knows.
Anyhow, all right. So
Miss Booger Picker is back this year.
Well, okay. So Peyton did tell me she's the one that brought up a teacher. She said, you can't be Mrs. Booger Picker because that was my kindergarten teacher. So I'm like, I got this. Don't give me a character. I can handle it on my own. But she was so excited to start in the middle of August when mom was not.
Seriously.
But I mean, do you want me to go all the way into the story?
I mean, it feels like you should.
Okay. So we were slowly getting some curriculum, and yeah. I had mentioned, because I remembered from... the previous years with Dylan, that he kind of prefers to have a slow, gradual, like, start into school. So I was like, okay, we've got a few things. Maybe we'll just sprinkle like a little.
Dust off the cobwebs.
Right. Okay. Like, I was like, okay, we're going to start doing our read-alouds or whatever.
Yeah, that's smart.
Anyhow.
Instead of being like, surprise, summer's over.
Right.
Here that comes. Wake up at 6 a.m.
Suckers.
It's me, Miss Booger Picker.
Oh no. That sorry. Was Hotel Transylvania. Vampire. It's fine.
Mrs. Booger Picker would have been so offended by that.
She was. So I quick went in the bathroom and like wrapped my hair up in a bun as if I had it planned.
Yeah.
Grabbed like random shit as if I also had that planned and came into the room and right before I walked around the corner after deciding my name, I told myself, go with the American accent. We're not going anywhere crazy. So I went with like a sing-songy preschool teacher instead.
Right.
And
what's
went
that?
In. Well, I called myself. I was talking kind, Julie. I don't know. What do you want me to say? You want me to say it?
Yeah. Introduce yourself to us right now.
Hi, class. Oh, I'm so happy you're here today. I'm Mrs. Melody, and I cannot wait to have you as my students.
Oh.
Can you please share your names with me?
Okay, on that really sweet note, Karen, that's so nice. All right, let's switch gears and talk about our interview today. Ooh, it's going to be great.
This interview is with Amy Moratz from Awakening Spirit School.
Love that name. Awakening Spirit School.
It says so much.
Wow.
Yeah. But she basically, she walks us through her personal journey of her own education. And then she's trained in education. So she talked about that. And then when her children entered the picture as well. And she really introduces and breaks down what a micro school is and how to go about looking into that for your own family, inspiring you to see if it's something you could offer.
Okay, here we go.
All right, well, we're sitting here today with Amy Moratz, and Amy has a holistic, nature-based, student-led micro school called Awakening Spirit School, and you're actually local to us anyhow, right in Woodbury, Minnesota.
Correct.
So I first heard the term micro school when I met with one of your parents at her place of business, and she was telling me about the amazing experience that her daughter was having, and I believe it was still her first year with you. But that term to me was something I had never heard before. Can you tell us a little bit about what a micro school actually is?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of different definitions out there. And if you look on Wikipedia, I think they define a micro school as any school under 100 kids, which to me still seems like a macro school. That's a very large school. So when I had this epiphany and this vision and this dream of starting a small school, I decided to look up all those definitions. I heard of micro school somewhere, and I thought, well, that just really says exactly what I want this to be. I want it to be small. I want it to be intimate. I want each student to be seen and heard. And in my version of a micro school, the kids get to have an active part of their own learning. So they're taking ownership of their learning. And because we're so extremely small, my school, it was under 10 kids. Now we're expanding in the fall that I'm sure we'll talk about later, but it's still going to be under 25 kids total.
Okay.
There are different definitions. There's a group called Micro School Builders that I actually work with, and we help teachers and parents form micro schools. And our loose definition for that is under 30 kids.
That's incredible.
But it could be private. It could be private. It could be, you could work and find a charter that you could work under in the public system. It could be sponsored by a nonprofit, or it could be completely owned by one person as like an LLC. There are tons of different ways to do it.
That's amazing. You know, we're new to like starting to look into all the different options that people have for education. So when you were starting this up, is it the same process like to apply for starting a school?
So that is going to depend on your state code. So my first advice to anybody who's looking to start a micro school is get into that state code. It's not the most fun reading. It's kind of dry, but you need to figure out what the requirements are. So for me in Minnesota, we file as a non-public school, just like homeschoolers do. So we file a letter of intent with the superintendent of the district that we will be located in. We collect information, names and addresses, and immunization forms, or if the parents refuse immunizations, that all of that form. And then we have to make sure that we're able to be audited by the state if they come and say, okay, what did you teach this year? And then the last requirement from Minnesota is that we do a standardized test at the end of the year. And they have a list that are all approved standardized tests that you can choose to administer. So my personal school chooses the Stanford Achievement Test because it's still paper-based. And for my client, who is a highly sensitive child who has a lot of anxieties, we try to make the testing process as calm and relaxed as possible. So we do a paper and pencil based test with no time limitations. And we have cats and crystals and essential oils and all kinds of stuff going on all over the time.
I love that. Okay. We want to know a lot more, but I want to throw a little wrench at you. Part of what I like to bring is to get to know you personally first before we dive more into your business. So I want to hear a little bit about the education that you had. Like, where did you go to school when you were little? And then, like, what were your favorite parts and least favorite parts about school?
Okay, I love that question. That is fantastic. I grew up in Iowa. Actually, I lived in Woodbury for a small amount of time. My mom had the dream of having a hobby farm. So between the ages of like 4 and 6, I was actually in Woodbury, Minnesota, which is the city that I live in currently. Then my parents got transferred to Iowa. All of those dreams of a hobby farm went up in smoke, but I was able to still do some really amazing things. My mom is now an educator. At the time, she was a stay-at-home mom. She has always been super interested in helping her children pursue their passions. So we were always at museums. She homeschooled me for a couple of years, first and second grade, when the traditional school system wasn't working out for me. I was in the gifted program, in the public school system for a little while, but then I really found my stride when I joined St. Augustine Catholic School in Des Moines, Iowa. And if you are in Des Moines and you're looking for an amazing educational opportunity, that is one there. It was so small. The teachers really, they followed us every year. We had the same teachers. They knew us. They joked with us. They encouraged us and supported us. And my favorite teacher is Mrs. Pat Hogan from sixth, seventh, and eighth grade, my English teacher, and I've actually taken what she taught us, and I then have taught it when I was a teacher. I was like, oh, Secret Life of Walter Mitty. We loved learning that. We totally need to teach that one.
Yeah.
Shakespeare, let's do it. You know, thinking about being inspired by this teacher. I went to a Catholic high school where I had an excellent education. It was very rigorous. I thrived in that environment. That's me. Not everybody does. And then when I went to college at St. Olaf College, I decided I really wanted to major in studio art and English. And at the time, I did not want to teach. Mm-hmm. My mom had then gone back to school and become a teacher. And she kept saying, Amy, I really think this might be a path that would, you know, be good for you. And I was very resistant because I wanted to do my own thing. Well, mm-hmm. as mothers always do and often do, she kind of knew the path that I would end up on. Mm-hmm. And after I graduated from St. Olaf, I was looking for a job in marketing and graphic design. And just at the time, there wasn't a whole lot. And then I started really thinking about what she said. And I thought, you know what? I have volunteered throughout college and high school with all kinds of camp programs, with all kinds of youth-facing opportunities, and I always really enjoyed it. I connected really well, and so I thought, well, okay, maybe I'll go back to school. So I found an excellent program at Bethel University, and it allowed me to work during the day and pursue my teaching degree at night, and I ended up actually getting my master's in education through Bethel and jumped headfirst into teaching.
Beautiful. That is awesome.
Yeah, that's cool.
So it's funny because we actually have pretty similar backgrounds without even knowing it. But Julie and I didn't do homeschool, but she did in home child care when we were younger. And then we both went to a private grade school. And so kind of the same thing is that, you know, we got a great education and it worked well for me, not necessarily as well for Julie, but
well, it worked well. I just still didn't like to sit in a desk.
But we had the same experience where we felt like we didn't really thrive. It couldn't have been better, but we were really blessed with a great kind of education upbringing. But we both ended up in education, and I think for a long time, we probably would not have said we would end up in education.
Right.
But I just wanted to point something out that you mentioned about your grade school growing up, and that the teachers followed you from class to class. How long did that go on? How many years did you have the same teacher?
Three years.
Okay.
So all of sixth, seventh, and eighth grade.
That is awesome to me. I think really that's one of the key factors that I find is it could be a simple switch that a lot of public schools could make, but also like really poignant in getting those kids to really grow connections with their teachers, come out of their shell. I mean, how much of an importance do you think that really had on you growing up and your development?
Oh, I think it's huge. The ability for the teachers to know me, and if I'm having a bad day, be able to extend grace. If I'm not working up to my potential, to be able to get on me and say, hey, I know you and I know what you're capable of, what's going on, and be able to talk. They knew our family situations. So they were just really able to be responsive teachers. And I think, so for example, the Waldorf way of teaching in the Waldorf school, the teachers follow the classes from first through eighth grade. I think that's beautiful. And that's kind of with my one room schoolhouse, we're doing the same thing. It's just a little tiny microcosm of that.
So what about like the opposite end of it? Karen's always pushed for that she believes in that method of teaching. I'm more used to like traditional public schools. So in my head, I think, man, wouldn't you get bored with like the same teacher or the same, like, can they only bring you the same stuff? You know what I mean? Like for people that aren't used to that way, what are your thoughts on that? Or is that just the downside to it?
I don't think it's there is a downside, which could be if you had a personality issue with that teacher.
Sure.
That could be a very obvious downside. I don't think, I don't think anybody's going to get bored because mm-hmm. you're always learning something new.
That's true.
You could be doing your Romeo and Juliet 1 year, and then the next year you're doing Macbeth, and then the next, it's just kind of like you get a subject matter expert for all of those different categories, and you're following them up, and then the teachers can be super responsive. Say I had a student who was way into astronomy. Well, this is for me particularly, but then we would study astronomy. Like, we're not just going to skip ahead and go on to the next thing in the curriculum. We're going to dive into what the kids are interested in. And having a teacher who really knows that about a child is something that is a gift.
Such a good point. I want to ask also, just from the stuff that you were just talking about. So you said when you were really young and going to like public school, it just wasn't working out for you. What was the part about school that really was your least favorite?
I have a very vivid memory of being in, it must have been first grade, could have been kindergarten. And the teacher wanted me to color in a page. Why? I never really got an answer. Right. And I was dissatisfied with the fact that I didn't get an answer. So I said, fine, you need me to color in the page. And I took a black crayon and I colored in the page.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the final straw for that teacher. Was like, nope, you're not following. This is not what I wanted you to do. And
oh,
I was like,
gosh.
Well, technically I followed the directions and I colored in the page.
Oh,
so that
it.
Was kind of like the last straw. And I didn't ever go back to that classroom because the way that she reacted made me cry, and I was frustrated, and I couldn't express myself, and she wasn't at a place where she was willing to listen, even if I could have expressed myself as a seven-year-old. And I have a feeling, I don't really remember, but I have a feeling that was just the last in the long line that I remember. And my mom finally said, you know what, this isn't working. They don't understand you.
Right.
I was wanting to read like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and she was having me color in, you know, an automobile on a piece of paper for no reason. So that's my...
incredible. Nice. For real. So then, and I know you talked so well about like your educational journey, and I assume that because you went originally for art, that probably like, classroom wise, was art your favorite, or what was your favorite little pieces throughout the day of school?
When I was in high school, definitely my English classes, because not only do I love literature, but the teachers I had were so engaging and they made it really come alive, and they didn't dumb it down for me. So if I was willing to get in there and ask questions on a literary analysis level, I had a teacher who would say, well, Amy, that's not the topic of the essay, but I would love for you to write your version. Mm-hmm. So just to have that example of how you can scaffold lessons for all types of learners, and it's not a big deal because obviously I knew what the question was, but I wanted to dive deeper, was now I've never thought about that before. So thank you very much. But that is basically, you know, a really important part of my own educational journey.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as art, yes, I enjoyed art. I enjoyed theater. I went into art more wanting to do marketing and graphic design, and then found that it was a really good way for me to express my voice.
Okay.
So I kind of came at it a little backwards that way.
Yeah, beautiful. Okay, since we're still in the zone of early years, we asked each other this the other day and got some pretty interesting answers. So can you think of, really putting you on the spot here, what was an embarrassing moment that you had at school, just for the fun of it?
An embarrassing moment at school. Oh my gosh, I'm sure I've had many, many, many. An embarrassing moment at school. Well, I have a good one.
Oh, yes.
When I was in sixth grade is when I started my Catholic school, and I was still fairly new to the classroom. My soon to be best friend and I showed up at school on the same day with spiral perms, and that's how we knew like our connection was going to be forged.
Nice.
like all time.
Yeah.
But with the spiral perm, you know, things have to be kept up or they kind of get, they got droopy. Oh, no. And my bangs were permed. It wasn't just my hair.
Classic.
Yes. And so I remember,
get it, girl.
This was huge for me. It probably wasn't huge for any other classmates. But after gym, we were required to change for gym, which was like awful, right? How could they require us to get out of our clothes when we're going to get all sweaty and gross? But we didn't have showers, but we would always try to like clean up in the sinks. Well, I got a little too excited about that, and I had doused my spiral permed bangs. And they were down by my nose for the entire day. The teachers kept telling me to push your bang. I can't see your face, Amy. Push your bangs up. And then everybody, you know, was making fun of me. I was the shaggy dog for a while because I had these bangs like an old English sheepdog.
Nice.
Bangs are where it was at.
Oh, it's classic.
Oh, man. Okay, so you have two children now, correct?
Correct.
And at what point did you know that traditional education was not going to be a good fit for them? Or did they spend any time in a traditional setting, or did you just jump right in?
They never have spent time in a traditional setting other than the early childhood education program that Minnesota has, which is outstanding. If you have a small child, babe through I think even preschool, and you haven't looked into this program, you need to. If you live in Minnesota, it's funded by the state. There's a sliding scale, and they have amazing parent educators and student educators, and you go in and have these mommy and me or daddy and me classes once a week that kind of support your parenting journey. So that was kind of the traditional start, and we had some amazing early childhood teachers. I decided that Alex is my oldest. She is 12 now, but when she was 4, we heard about the Minnesota Waldorf School early childhood classes. And I thought, hey, that sounds really cool. I was pretty crunchy. I made all my own baby food. I tried to use like organic natural materials. And it just seemed like kind of a really cool fit. So we took some parent-child classes there. And I was blown away by the rhythm, the simplicity, the gentle and natural and beautiful aspect of the classroom. Alex then ended up going there for the mixed age kindergarten through ages 3 to 6. When it came time for my son to start going to preschool and Alex was supposed to go to first grade, we looked at the numbers and we realized that this wonderful education was just not fiscally doable for our family. It was a long drive to get there. My baby was in the car for a long time driving the sister back and forth. And I remember sitting with my husband and my mom again over Easter, and we're talking about, we went and visited the public school, which is literally across the street from my house. Like my kids they can take a sidewalk all the way to the public school. And I went there and I walked in and it was really jarring. I am a highly sensitive person. It was really jarring for me to have all of these colors and sounds and lights and posters everywhere. And then I'm talking to the first grade teacher and she's talking to me about the laptops and the screen time, which coming from a Waldorf background, there was like no media at all. And that was kind of a contractual obligation with families. They really wanted to keep it out of those young kids' eyes and minds. And I thought, this is like 180 degrees. I don't want her in this environment. The teacher was loving and kind, but it's not where I needed her to be. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at my husband and I said, well, hold on. I do have a master's in education. Like I kind of know what I'm doing and what I want. Why don't I just do it? And that was, it sounds so silly, but that was such a turning point for me when I realized that I don't have to do it the traditional way. I can do it my way. Mm-hmm. And if I'm doing it for the betterment of my children, then that's exactly what I need to be doing. So I started homeschooling her for first grade. My son, I still felt, needed a preschool experience. And so we found an amazing farm, the children's farm in, I think it's Lake Elmore, Stillwater. Yeah. Is fantastic. And it was exactly what he needed. Well, my daughter needed the rhythm and the storytelling and the gentle guidance of the Waldorf teachers. My son needed to be out there responsible for doing stuff. He, it was his job to feed that steer every day that he took it. You know, if he wasn't there, who was going to feed it? And they were traipsing through the woods and climbing over fences and having an equally amazing but different preschool experience. Yeah. So it was that kind of then led me to say, okay, how do I mesh this and how do I combine it into something of my own?
That's awesome. Yeah. Now that I know we could be best friends, Amy.
I know.
It's truly over here. We're basically the same person. So I knew this was too good to be true. But I'm wondering, how did that evolve from a homeschool setting with your two children to something beyond that?
So the friend that you mentioned, Amanda Riley, has had a personal training fitness center called Blissful Balance, which has now morphed to something else. But because I was a homeschooling mom, I decided to show my kids that it's important to take care of our bodies. And this needs to be actually a part of our day, is we all go to some place where we can either watch mom work out or work out with mom. And I tried a couple different gyms and they were just all sticking kids in the corner with videos. And I thought, nope. So I needed to find somewhere that would welcome my children to the fitness floor. So I found Amanda. As she was watching me with my kiddos, her daughter is the same age as my oldest. And her daughter had been asking her to homeschool her. She is a very highly sensitive child. She, when she feels stressed, you know, our amygdalas in our brain are where we function. And when you feel stressed, you can freeze, you can fight, or you can flight, which is run away. This little girl would freeze and weep. And it would be somebody asking a question in class that she didn't know the answer to, or she didn't think she understood it. And so every day she would be in school weeping. The kids were making fun of her. The teachers were frustrated. She was frustrated. Her mother was beyond herself, because when you're in that situation as a parent, all you want to do is make it better, and she couldn't. She wanted to homeschool in her heart, but it wasn't her wheelhouse. She had a full-time business to run as an entrepreneur. And as we got to know each other, she approached me and said, would you ever consider, and she used the word homeschooling, my daughter? Having known this lovely little girl who is obedient and respectful and kind and loving, I said, well, I haven't thought about that, but if there was anybody that I would, it would be your child. So I took him, I said, let me think about it and see what I can figure out. And so I took a couple weeks to really think on it and meditate and pray and say, is this what I want to do? This is going to change my relationship with my kids to bring another child in. But it needs to be done. At the same time, my daughter, who was at that time in second grade, was getting to the point where she was, I really want a friend. Maybe I should try public school. Maybe. And so I thought, well, maybe this is a good solution, because then she would have someone she's connected with. I could be giving my gifts out to more people. I'd be helping this family. And so the first year, we weren't an official school. That mother registered as a homeschool family. I registered as a homeschooling family. I taught the academics and she taught all of the health and wellness and nutrition. So it was kind of like an unofficial co-op. That worked awesome. And my son then was getting ready for first grade and he started saying, well, I want a little friend.
Right.
And I thought, okay, is it time? So my second family was a family that I had actually met through the early childhood family education program. We had done classes for the boys when they were both babies. And I knew that this little guy was a highly sensitive kiddo who his mom kept posting things on Facebook about he's crying. He says he's stupid. How do I help my child with self-esteem problems? And so I just kind of took a leap and I contacted her and I said, hey, I know you're working with A, B, and C specialists. Just know that I'm here and I'm doing this. And because I know your family and I know that you have the same values, if you're interested, let's talk. The first response was, oh, nope, we have everything taken care of. Thank you so much. That was really sweet of you to reach out. 2 weeks later, actually, let's talk. We need to figure out something else. So when they approached me, I said, okay, now with four kiddos, I need to make this official and not do a homeschooling co-op. It's great if you want to do that, but I'm the lead teacher. This is my baby. I'm the director. I'm in charge. So I just need to take that onus upon myself. So then I researched how I start a private school in Minnesota. And then that's how I've been filing ever since then. So that first year I had four students. And then the little boy's brother ended up coming. They pulled him out of public school because they saw what an amazing time his little brother was having. And then the next year I had two more students. And so then I was up to seven for this past school year.
Wow. So we have actually, one of our biggest goals here is actually to try to make different schooling options accessible to families. You mentioned the Waldorf school that your daughter attended and that financially it wasn't feasible for your family. And that is something that is, I would say, pretty common for most families that have two, three children. That's kind of where I fit myself. And how do you think parents can go about, you know, finding that access? What kind of routes do you think parents can take? You mentioned a ton of great resources. I know you said micro school builders, but do you see any other options for parents to not get so overwhelmed? When I would look and just go to Google and start researching things, it was very easy for me to kind of go down the rabbit hole and start feeling so overwhelmed that I felt like I didn't really have any options. So is there any advice that you can give to parents to try to make it more accessible and a little less overwhelming?
The biggest thing I would say is be crystal clear about what you want for your child. Once you can figure that out, you're going to be able to weed through all of the, because you're right, there are so many options out there. And especially in this Minnesota, Wisconsin area, it's so exciting. There are so many different educational opportunities. But once you're really clear about what you want for your child and what your child needs, which may be two different things that you need to really sit with. So I mentioned my son really needed to be active while he was in school. So I knew that, you know, A, B, and C, while they have pictures of kids at desks and they're talking about their high academic standards, you know, my kid is super smart, but that's not what I want for him. I want him to be building and creating and kinesthetically learning while he's doing so. So I knew to look for a program that had a lot of outdoor time, a program that had a lot of student-led projects or opportunities, and a lot of play. Like, don't discount play. That is 100% the time that children actually make connections and their little neurons fire and make new synapses is during play, not when they're sitting there copying a worksheet. I know that doesn't exactly answer your question.
No, that's great.
But once you're crystal clear, then it'll be a little easier.
I think that actually makes a lot of sense because I think that is a step that a lot of parents overlook. And it's easy to, especially when you're looking into all the different options and you can see the benefits to every single one of them. So I think that is a step that is easily taken by parents and to really sit down and get focused on what their kids really need. You mentioned before, a few times now actually, about student-led classrooms. And actually in high school, your teachers seemed like they were able to have a little bit of freedom with being able to go into that and allow the students to really lead where that educational piece was going. Do you think that's something that public school teachers are able to incorporate in their classrooms? Or I don't think we actually really touched on your experience teaching before your kids either. So can you kind of touch on that and see if there's
pieces that can be brought into public schools, or what your take is on if the teachers have the freedom to do things like that?
I think it depends on your administration. Mm-hmm. So the school that I taught at for 3 years before I was a full-time educator at home was called Minneapolis Academy. And it was a charter school. I was in the founding teachers of the charter school. And it was like a dream come true because I had graduated with my master, or actually I hadn't even gotten my master's, and I was still working in my master's. I had graduated with my teaching license. And I was hired as the English teacher for this middle school, and I got to design my own classroom. It was brand new. I got to order all of the books I wanted for the library. I got to figure out exactly what materials I wanted. It was beautiful. It was a school that was modeled after the KIPP Academy schools, which is a knowledge is power, where they take low-income students and they introduce them to the fact that they can go to college if that's what they choose, and having high expectations for kids who maybe haven't had high expectations put on them before, push them to achieve and do things that they wouldn't have done. The interesting thing about this school that I taught in was that we had single-sex classrooms. So I had a group of sixth grade boys, and then the next hour was a group of sixth grade girls. So what was so great about that was, because our brains are different and they actually biologically learn differently, the boys would be doing we'd be studying the exact same curriculum. So for example, Tom Sawyer. So the boys would want to get up and act out the part, because, you know, kinesthetically, that's how they're connecting with the plot and the storyline. The girls, while we had the exact same chapter, exact same book, and I would give them the option to act it out, but they would choose to do a panel discussion where they would sit and talk about, it would end up going into why Becky decided to refuse Tom and what she was probably thinking. And then they would go into, I would decide, hey, your homework today is to write a journal from Becky with your innermost thoughts. While the boys would end up having an assignment, draw a graphic novel strip on, you know, the action points of this series. So I think that I don't have a traditional experience in teaching. I think that if we are able to educate our teachers to feel free to scaffold and to differentiate instruction, even from group to group, we're going to get a whole lot more buyback and interest from the kids. Mm-hmm. So I don't have an experience right now in the traditional schools that I can really speak to how much freedom they have. All I know is that I hear a lot of teachers who are coming to us in microschool builders who are dissatisfied, disenfranchised, and frustrated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what we've been talking about, is really, you know, that teachers want to do more, but sometimes they're limited in doing so due to the administration, and where that push should come from. Should it come from parents being the ones to speak up and advocating for the teachers? Should it be teachers who are kind of bringing these ideas forward? And I know that's kind of where it's a sticky topic, but again, just in our goal to make it accessible to everyone, we realize that the need for public education is huge. So we want to make sure that we're, you know, supporting the teachers and the families wherever they are in their experience.
So we can kind of pick up on things as we've been talking, but what I'd like to know is, what ways are you making the change that you hope to see in education?
So, interestingly enough, when I began this journey, I did a whole lot of direct instruction because mm-hmm. that's how I had taught. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you know, there's feedback and we'd have discussion and things like that. But the way my classroom looks now, as opposed to when I was teaching in the charter school, is completely different. So now I recognize that kids need a foundational level of math and reading. So we have that done at an independent level. Everyone is at their own level, moving with at their own pace with that in my school. Mm-hmm. We do have a main lesson when the whole school, ages first grade to eighth grade, come together and we dive into a topic. And that's not as much about learning the facts around World War I or ancient Egypt. It's about learning to listen and learning to take notes and learning what's important and learning what sparks your interest. Because for the whole second half of the day, we do passion projects, which is something that a 20-year-old me would have been like, what? You let them do what? How do you control that? How do you make sure everyone is learning? And the 40-year-old, almost 40-year-old me says, oh my gosh, that is the time when they do the most learning. Yes. So I help scaffold because some kids need more help than others. They've had more or less experience being in the driver's seat of their own education by the time they come to me. And so we discover something. It's like an inquiry project. What are you passionate about? What questions do you have? Mm-hmm. What would you like to learn? And then they just go from there. I have a kiddo building a backyard forge to melt aluminum cans down to make ingots. Oh, yes. I have a couple kids who were super interested in special effects makeup last year. So we brought in, I try to find subject matter experts in the cities that I can bring in to teach a class. And everybody gets the class. They get the benefit of learning and doing this. But for the kids who are really interested, it's super inspiring. And then they have a connection where they can ask questions on a personal level. This year, kids were interested in learning how to sew and design clothing. So we actually was right when the pandemic started. We were all sewing masks, way before it was popular, you guys.
Oh, my gosh. Divine timing.
Right?
Do the passion projects last for the entire year?
It depends on the child, and it depends on the interest. And if interest wanes and something wants to pick up somewhere else, they can do it. My job as the facilitator is to, I take on the responsibility of taking pictures or videos so that we can use that to build artifacts that they have then to show their learning process. The older kids do that themselves, but definitely the younger kids, I'm taking pictures. They're working on building Google sites this year so they can each have their own website where they throw up all of their artifacts that they've been working on. Because that's kind of part of the state requirement is when they come to me, if they come to me and say, okay, what were you doing? I'll have that to say, oh, here, by the way, there are the websites that the children made with all of the learning that's been going on in the afternoon. So,
yeah. Wow. Yeah. So cool. How do you pick your curriculum?
The kids pick it.
Okay.
Honestly, well, that's not 100% true. The math and the reading curriculum I use for foundational pieces, I've picked. We use teaching textbooks for math, which is accessible for all kinds of homeschool families, and it's both web-based and paper-based, so the kids have a choice of how they want to learn that. The reading foundational curriculum that I have chosen is called Mind Play. I have a couple of kids who are dyslexic, and so I'm always looking for programs that are going to be good for the traditional learner and then good for atypical learners as well. Mm-hmm. So Mind Play assesses each child where they are for fluency, for phonetics, for even as much as visual tracking. And then it gives them what they need, you know, every day, 20 minutes a day that they can just sit and focus on those reading skills. As far as the rest of our curriculum, the kids vote on what they want to do for a main lesson. So I mentioned World War I. So then it's my job to curate the content, and I get it from all over the place. So I use Simply Charlotte Mason is an awesome site that has a bunch of really good recommendations for living books. We read a lot of living books when it comes to historical events because it just makes it more accessible for kids. We I found an awesome graphic novel for World War One that took all of the countries and assigned them a different animal. So as you're reading through, it's really easy to keep track of which, you know, what happened to who and where. Wow. And then we try to find as many first person documents as we can. And the Minnesota Historical Society has amazing trunks that are traveling trunks that you can order, and they'll come to your classroom and you have all of these really cool reproductions to use too. For science, I love the Good and the Beautiful curriculums. That's the name of the company that makes them. And they're kind of all ages, and within the curriculum, it'll have suggestions for scaffolding for older and younger students. So for a one-room schoolhouse, it kind of makes it really easy for me to say, okay, here's our chemistry unit. Everybody's together for the little bit. The little kids go off and play. The older kids get to do A, B, and C, and then the oldest kids get an extension this way. So it all just kind of works out that way.
So you do something additionally to your typical day in the classroom, but you offer something called road schooling, and you actually just got back from another trip. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, you just totally lit me up. This is like my passion project, right?
If you guys could see her face right now, she got very, very excited.
No, my passion is travel, because I feel like you can only truly understand a culture and a people if you've traveled and experienced and talked to people and eaten food and heard the language spoken. And so I love international travel. We haven't gotten to that point quite yet with our school, but that is on the horizon. We have kiddos who really want to do that. So backing up, what we do is 3 weeks a year, about a week each, we go on a whole school road school adventure. So what that looks like is dependent on where the kids really want to go. So for example, we had an opportunity to travel to Atlanta a few years ago. And so the kids then researched, okay, what's in Atlanta? And they found there's the Coke, World of Coke, there's all the Martin Luther King things. And then, there's a zoo, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so what are we going to study in order to be completely ready to learn when we get there and absorb everything? So we ended up studying civil rights. And then when we got to the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial, everybody was like shooting answers back at the parks people. And they were so impressed. We studied Jim Henson. We made our own puppets. We studied the history of the Muppets. And the Center for Puppetry Arts in Atlanta has an extensive and amazing Jim Henson collection. Mm-hmm. So we took a tour there, and the tour guide was blown away by the fact that my kids knew all of this inane trivia about Jim Henson. And he's like, you're appreciating this more than all of the adults I've taken in the last 2 months on this tour. Yeah. But just preparing them that way to go travel and experience so that they remember even more about what they did. We've been to Phoenix. We've been to, we went to Colorado and New Mexico. We just got back from Washington, D.C. trip that was a little truncated, you know, due to the current pandemic. But we still got to go to the International Spy Museum. And we got to go to a really cool cherry blossom art technology exhibit and stroll the mall and see a bunch of the stuff. So that was really neat too. But yeah, it's the kids decide where we want to go. So I had mentioned international. I have two kiddos who really want to study Spanish. So we decided, well, okay, let's do that. And let's go to Playa del Carmen. So that's in the future. And then we have kiddos who have been saving up money for a trip to Tokyo for like 3 years.
Wow. Oh wow.
They have like a business plan that they want to go buy Pokemon stuffed animals and then bring it back and sell them. And I'm like, I don't know anything about import export guys. I have to do some research.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, that speaks volumes too about how much those kids are actually taking in what you're teaching them. Because when I think about just field trips that we would take in grade school and beyond, we would always learn the subject matter before we went to the field trip. But I can guarantee you that none of us were raising our hands and asking questions or really retaining any of that knowledge previously learned. So kudos to you for being able for the kids to be so engaged that they're actually retaining that information, which is the end goal of educating our kids, I would imagine, anyhow. You mentioned real briefly about some future plans that you have for this coming fall and beyond, and we'd really like to hear what you have planned and in store. Can you share that
Absolutely.
With us?
I would love to. So right now, I don't think I mentioned my current school is located just in the lower level of my home. So as I started this school, it was kind of in my head a proof of concept school. I needed to make sure that I had people who needed my services and I had families who would entrust me with this. And I didn't want a lot of overhead. So the school is in my lower level. As I've gotten more students and more interest, and some of these students are getting bigger and their little shoulders are now hitting the walls because they don't know where they're going. I realized, okay, we are quickly outgrowing the lower level of my home. So we are in negotiations right now to acquire a piece of property. This one that we're working on is in Lake Elmo. We've worked with the city council. I had to actually change the city code in order to bring a school onto a rural residential area. So I've been working on this for a long time. I've learned so much about city politics and city councils and how that all works. Because we're always learning, right? This is, the kids can watch me do my passion project as we're doing this. So we're getting a farmhouse. The school will be inside the farmhouse. So it's still an in-home setting that's very comfortable and calm and curated consciously. And then we will be able to have animals and a garden, and the kids already have plans to build like a meditative labyrinth, and they want to build a castle in the woods. And it's really exciting. And what's the best part is that it's not just my brainchild anymore. Now it's a community that is creating this together. Yeah. So we're adding two more teachers in the fall. And we are upping our enrollment to 24 kids. And we're starting a forest kindergarten for the littles. So ages 3 to 6 will be forest kindergarten. And then first grade through eighth grade will be with two teachers. So we'll still have a really low student-to-teacher ratio.
Amazing.
That's so cool.
I can't help but think like that this could have been a seed planted at a very young age from your mom. She must be like,
this
shut
is
up,
amazing.
Mom.
100%. 100%.
You can say that now because you're almost 40, as you said. So now it's acceptable.
Exactly.
Now that you're a mom yourself, you can understand, okay, mom, you were right. Let's move on.
Absolutely. Well, my dream, so she is a reading recovery teacher in the public school system in Des Moines right now. My dream would be able to bring her on the team and figure out how to facilitate her in a little mother-in-law cottage or something. That would be lovely.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Right. We are best friends. I really think we are the same person. I believe some of my exact words when starting this was, there could be a place for us to work together and for mom to come in at some point. And
so if Karen and my mom show up at your little farmhouse school, please.
You are welcome with open arms.
I'm just going to enroll myself as a student, an advanced learner. Well, thank you so much for sharing everything with us today. This has been so informative and just expansive and inspirational. I loved everything that you said. We do like to wrap up our interviews with some rapid fire questions. So
they're random.
Random. That's your phone. Let's start a timer.
Your mom.
I don't even know how to get a timer on my phone. Okay. So hold on. 1 minute, Julie. You're the one that does
one
this.
1 minute.
1 minute. Okay. Okay. All right. Are you ready?
How could I not be?
Function. All right, here we go.
Okay, what is the most used app on your phone?
Time Hop.
Cat what? Or dog?
Follow up question.
Cat.
What's the last thing you did alone?
I did the infrared sauna.
Oh,
What's a staple that you have in your fridge at all times?
Kombucha.
Oh, yes. Oh my gosh, we are. You can't get over it. If you had to pick a single word to describe this year so far, what would it be?
Pivot.
Oh, okay. All right. I think the last one.
What would be
rapid fire, but.
Oh, so where can people find you, follow you, and send you some love?
Absolutely. So we have a website, www.awakeningspiritschool.com. You can also find us on Facebook under Awakening Spirit School. So that would be awesome to see you guys all there. If you're interested in learning more about micro school building, I'll just give a shout out to the Micro School Builder Facebook group and www.microschoolbuilders.com.
Awesome. Amazing. And we will include all of those resources in the show notes. And if you can, we would love to see more of your classroom. So if you want to take a few photos of it and send it to us or take a quick little video, we'd love to upload that as well so people can get some inspiration if they want to do this for homeschooling or something in their own home as well.
That's a great idea. I love it.
And cool. Thank you, Amy. Thank you so much for everything you're doing for our children. And it sounds really cool. And when we are not socially distant, I will definitely want to come.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I would love, especially when the new farmhouse. Oh, I would love it.
I was going to say, we'll make sure that Chasing Education gets an invite to the grand opening.
Yay. Oh, good. Do it. Okay.
We're on the VIP list.
Well, thank you. You were such a wonderful guest.
Yeah.
Thank you, Amy.
This was so fun.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, if you guys are in the Hudson area and would like to enroll your children in my micro school
that just began in your head.
It's already started. Enrollment now open.
Oh, she was so good.
Oh man.
Very inspirational.
The inspiration. We have to be honest. We are not recording this outro immediately following the interview, but it is when we decided that we should now do the outro immediately following the interview because We were
jumping around as soon as buzzy. We got off.
We were the buzzing interview. Effing bees. I can't even, like, we were shaking. It was, wow.
She was good. She was good.
Set the tone.
She really, I would, like, yeah, she inspired us all on different levels.
Yeah.
You and Sarah.
It's opening fall 2020.
Starting your own school immediately.
In my house. Okay, I got this.
Oh. I immediately was like, oh my gosh, I'm definitely taking my classroom on a field trip to anywhere.
Road schooling. Incorporating.
Road school. Right. And that it's called road school, it's even cooler.
So good.
All right, we had this idea to incorporate you, our beautiful audience, and maybe ask Amy some follow-up interview questions that we might not have hit on. I know I have a couple since the interview.
Because we all had 27.
Yeah. So if people have questions for Amy that we can send to her, where can they put them?
You can message us on Instagram, or you can reply to, I'm going to put it in the stories where it actually has a question box.
Nice.
So you can respond to that on our podcast launch. When this podcast launches and goes out, then it will be on that story. And then also subscribe to our newsletter by going to our website at chasingeducationpodcast.com. And the newsletter link will actually just pop up onto the page. Otherwise, we can always scroll to the bottom and find it there as well. And we'll be sending out the newsletters, and the answers to the questions will actually be in the newsletter. So you have to subscribe.
That's cool. Please subscribe so that we can keep going with this. And then Amy also sent us some like really cute pictures of her workspace, classroom.
So cute.
So we're going to put those on the website.
We will put those in the show notes.
In the show notes.
On the website. I'll also probably, actually I already been adding some of them to Instagram, but we'll continue to do that.
Very
as
cool.
Well.
It gets you an idea of our classroom, but it also gets you psyched for whatever space you're creating for yourself too. Mm-hmm. So.
And speaking of Instagram, if you guys know people that would be great, we'd like to start showcasing like families or schools, even if we're not interviewing them at the time, definitely showcasing them one day a week on Instagram. So just keep us posted, sending us messages, letting us know who we should follow, Anything like that. We would love to showcase families that are doing a great job, or schools that are doing incredible work, or teachers who are incorporating things into their classrooms. Let us know.
Beautiful.
Perfect.
All right. Until next time.
Oh my God. When is she going to stop? When is she going to stop?
I was hoping it would catch on.
What feeling are we going for? That feels very light. All right.
So also send us that on Insta. Yes. We want to hear.
Tell us what kind of music genre.
Shabba, blah, blah, boo,
shut up. Okay. And stop talking. Yeah.